Welcome to this podcast. I'm speaking to Brett Sanders, Head of Operations for the Restaurasi Ecosystem Riau Project, also known as RER. Brett will be sharing with us his experience and involvement in the project. Brett, I would like to start off with a question on how did you become involved in the RER project, and what does this project mean to you on a personal level?
I've been working with April since 2003. I first joined April as their firefighting coordinator to establish fire suppression systems to protect their plantations and conservation areas. In 2012, however, I pursued a new and unique opportunity to work with the first ecosystem restoration company in Indonesia, known as Hutan Harapan. After working there for about 3.5 years, RER was developing, and I saw some real advantages. So I began to talk with the folks at April and RER, and I returned and joined RER in 2016.
What do you think this project has achieved so far to date?
One of the most important things it has achieved in the past 5 years is it's created a space on the Kampar Peninsula where ecosystems, wildlife, vegetation can now thrive and flourish. To be factual, in the past 3 years, we've had no disturbance in the RER area, meaning no illegal logging, no forest encroachment, and no fires occurring. And this is because of the active management that the RER staff are doing every day on the Kampar Peninsula.
How important is the community to the restoration project?
It's extremely important because without the community's understanding and acceptance of what the company is doing in the area that we're working, then threats to the forest could persist. And it's through dialogue, ongoing engagement, and developing agreements between RER and the local fishermen, as an example, that we're able to maintain their rights and usage of the rivers and harvest of fish, while at the same time we've worked with them to reduce their impact on this area, and they're happy with it because they're getting better results. They're harvesting more fish today than they were a few years ago. They can see the recovery of the forest occurring around them, and they're getting more attention, and they understand that this is an important area because we bring visitors in to meet and talk with the fishermen. So understanding what the community's needs are and constant and ongoing engagement with them, talking, meeting, and immediately dealing with any potential conflicts so they don't come in, become a problem, yeah? We also welcome and utilize external parties, local NGOs that can work with the communities and help to enhance their lifestyles. We have another partner, their name is Bidara, and they, similar to FFI, have embedded community officers into two communities and working with local farmers in order to promote and teach no-burn farming techniques, which help them to intensify their vegetable farming and minimize their impact on the peat and the forest surrounding. And by working with these farmers and these communities, we're able to build this trust. And trust is what's needed in order to maintain the forest that surrounds them.
RER talks about ecosystem restoration as a four-stage process. Can you explain?
Yes. We have a slogan that we use internally and like to promote externally. We say it's protect, assess, restore, manage. Each of these clearly identify the various stages, if you will, of our management approach. Now, these stages don't necessarily happen in sequence. They happen continuously all the time at different locations across our landscape. But each of them are important. For us, protection is number one. Because we are working to restore a degraded area, the first step is to make sure no further degradation occurs in the now or in the future. So this is where the forest protection aspect comes in. Protect the area from encroachment, from uncontrolled drainage, from animal poaching, or from fires. Any disturbances is what we're looking to protect the forest from. And part of this is not just doing patrols and securing the area, but again, developing trust between the company and the communities which surround the area so that people do not cause threats to the forest. So protection is number one. Number two, assess. And this is inherently what FFI is taking the lead on for us. They're doing the assessments, the baseline assessments for us. This includes using camera traps across the landscape to identify wildlife, doing biodiversity transects, again, for wildlife and vegetation, and doing carbon studies to assess the amount of carbon above and below the ground. And again, back to the social studies, understanding, gathering the data needed and making these assessments so that we can have a baseline from which to start monitoring our progress. Now that we have a baseline from our assessment stage, we're now able to begin the restoration phase. We can identify the gaps between where we are, the existing condition, and the desired condition that we want to move towards in the future. The desired condition is inherently we want to improve forest quality, we want to seek to develop and maintain sustainable populations of wildlife species, such as tigers or certain animals, and protect and enhance the populations of threatened and endangered species as well, of birds and animals and plants. So assessment and restoration go hand in hand. Finally, and also continuously, is manage. Management is never ending. It's about managing people, our own teams, and managing people who utilize the forest. And management is important because we have to set guidelines and understanding on how the forest should be used and what are the limitations and allowances that we can have to ensure long-term, responsible, sustainable utilization of the forest resources.
So the project has been ongoing for the last 5 years. Can you share a summary of where the project is today? What are the key highlights, the achievement of now, and where we're heading from here on?
One of the most important things that April and RER are demonstrating through this project is that the model that we are advocating for ecosystem restoration is this protection-production model. It's that trying to lock up forest in the fortress style is not effective. Unfortunately, in many places, established protected areas that are not well supported by local communities or not well financed or not well enforced have disappeared and are losing their forest cover and their fauna. At RER, we have this production ring of fiber plantations that surround our core forest area. And because we have what I would call a unified and common objective for managing the landscape within the large area of plantations and the RER restoration area, we're able to better protect and assess and restore without having the impacts of forest encroachment. We're seeing positive outcomes from this model of integrating plantations with natural forest conservation, even in peatland. And peatland is a sensitive issue because of the issues of climate change, but the value of this protection production model is that we are producing products as a company, as the fiber plantations as the source of those products, and then we're able to set aside a certain amount of finance to pay for the protection and conservation of the natural forest on the interior. And without the two both go hand in hand, production and protection. And the sustainable finance is the key to making that work.
What are the learnings from this project that you feel can be applied to other types of restoration projects?
Again, because of the assessments that have been done, even in a degraded forest, we're finding that there is still incredible wildlife and biodiversity present, even in a degraded forest, and that these forests need to be restored. They should not be written off. And given time to rest, recovery can occur. And so the innovative idea of restoration as created by the government of Indonesia 10 years ago needs to expand, needs to continue. Granted, it also needs refinement. Restoration is not cheap. It's a legal license having these concessions, and there's mandated costs involved, fees that must be paid, obligations, employees, salaries, that it costs money to operate. And so a significant lesson learned is that unless you have reliable, stable financing to cover not just the first year, the second year, or for 3 years in a project, but the entire 60-year license period, then I would suggest someone not getting into ecosystem restoration. But the key to doing it is having a successful business, and a business that has experience in managing land, that is professional and has depth of skill sets and knowledge of the legal requirements for managing land, especially in Indonesia. April has this. So there's still valuable things to be found in the forest. Reliable financing is necessary to pay for the cost of operating, and experience is needed in managing land, not just an idea and a goodwill, but experience.
You're clearly very committed and very passionate about this project. What is it that is the driver behind this commitment and this passion?
I'm a trained forester. I can recall, though, as a young man, watching National Geographic and hearing about the beginnings of deforestation occurring in the tropics, the tropical regions of the world. And I guess that's partly what brought me here to Asia 17 years ago now, was to see this forest before it was gone. I look at the Kampar now, today, as knowing that it's the largest and last remaining lowland forest in Sumatra of this type, peatland. And my commitment to it is because I've been specifically on this site for 17 years. I've seen changes happen, as Tony has described, so rapidly. And it saddens me that these changes have occurred. Many are for the good, because it has helped the country, Indonesia, and the people develop and alleviate poverty and develop economies. And that's supporting people, better educations and better family life and livelihoods. These are all positive, but that has come at an expense. And so now, in my opinion, now is the time we have to draw the line. There's so little left that we need to show demonstrable commitment to making this work. And I think this model's working. It is working, this protection production model. As long as there continues to be an enabling governance that allows for this model to continue, I am confident the Kampar will be the same, will be better conditioned tomorrow than it is today.
Thank you very much for joining me.